face, Steve? Is that a question? Is there a question behind that face? Okay. Any thoughts or comments?
Well.
Yes.
This isn't directly related to what you're talking about, but you know, this idea of the perspective of people from other countries about America and Americans is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of ways to look at it, and you alluded to them. But also, I think that this is a generalization, but people in Europe, of course, have a different perspective on conflict and on their relation to the rest of the world. And I think particularly in light of the history of certain countries in Europe having had empires or smatterings of empire in recent times that within our lifetime have dissolved, there's a certain sense of guilt that still exists within these societies about what they did, quote unquote.
Oh, Steve, you're going in a direction I can't possibly go. I mean, it's an interesting discussion, but it's not one I can have.
No, I actually wasn't. That's as far
okay.
as I was going to go.
Okay, you better go somewhere that I can go then.
So, the reason I'm saying it is this. People have all sorts of opinions. And the concept of a just war that Swami is talking about in this chapter and in this book is a valid concept. And I think it's very helpful the way he describes it, because in a larger picture, what limits us oftentimes is either our individual experiences or, let's say, larger group experiences that taint our perspective. And it's also what keeps us, it's the same thing that keeps us from reaching out to God. It's a certain type of fear.
I think there's some place I can go with this. Can I go with this?
Sure.
In Education for Life, Swamiji says that the goal of education for life is about educating children. But since we're all children compared to God realized masters, there's a lot in it that applies. And he again follows this same premise that he uses in all his books. If you're clear on your objective, it's much easier to get there. If you don't really know what your objective is, then you get very confused about how to get there. That's why when he says here, he makes it very clear. The objective of the leader is fulfillment for the leader and for the people he's serving. And so then you have to define what is fulfillment, what does that mean? And then it's much more clear to know how to get there because you weigh everything against that. Annihilation of your way of life would make fulfillment difficult. And you know, during the Second World War, when the countries were being invaded and their freedoms were being taken away and the system of government was disharmonious with their values, they were not going to be fulfilled by avoiding war. Even though avoiding war was a better road to fulfillment than getting into war, but allowing themselves to be taken over by a mad leader who would destroy their way of life, and that's where Swami says difficult choices had to be made. So in Education for Life, he's talking about the difficulty with education for children these days is that it's primarily driven by this concept of getting an education so that you can get a job, so that you can get money. I'm digressing a bit, but it's actually quite pertinent to this. I read something in the San Jose Mercury. They had a little section at Christmas time, and they sort of put out this questionnaire, and children had said, "What do I want for Christmas?" I didn't cut this one out, but I should have. A 13-year-old child wrote something that was essentially like this. "I am 13 years old. I'm just a child. I would like to have a little fun. The problem is, my parents have told me that in order to have fun when I'm grown up, I have to have a lot of money or at least enough money. And the only way I can have enough money is if I have a good enough job. And in order to have a good enough job, I have to have a good education and I have to get into a good school. So now I have to be thinking all the time about my homework and my education and getting into college. And so I feel pressured all the time. I try to have fun because, after all, I'm just a kid. but I have to think like this, so that's what I want for Christmas. Now, I mean, that was just like the epitome of Silicon Valley. That is not at all exceptional, what I just said. You know, we run a school here, so we know a lot about how people think about these things. Because it's just being very unclear on the concept. I mean, the concept that you want to have fun is not a bad concept, but it's like, how did we get here? It's because we got so mixed up and so externalized about what we think is going to give us right values. So Swamiji says the goal of education is, and then of course he discusses how if you don't have peace, you don't have anything. You can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have honor and peace within you and balance and all the things that you can obviously say. But he said the goal of education is to develop true maturity. You've heard this before. True maturity is, and then he says, well, what is true maturity? True maturity is the ability to relate to realities other than one's own. In other words, to get along in the world. Because with all that people are educated, they don't know how to be married, they don't know how to be employees, they don't know how to be leaders, they often don't know how to work, they don't know how to cope with disappointment, they don't know how to persevere. You know, all of these things, because it's all been externalized. They don't know how to relate to any reality but the little reality they're in. But if you can relate to realities other than your own, then you can interact with the world around you. So where on earth was I going with that? What did you ask me? Okay, you tell me how that relates to what you said. You were talking about what? Oh, just wars.
As a perspective, if you can't relate to somebody else's reality, you may have a difficult time understanding where they're coming from and why they're doing what they're doing.
Right. That wasn't exactly what I was going to say, but that's just good enough. No, I had something else that was more pertinent, though. What was I thinking? Well, I guess that is essentially it, which is what, right, we're just all raised in these tiny little bubbles, and we're not taught to see the world from any perspective but our own. I had something more useful to say, but I have totally lost it, so we'll just have to wait till it comes back. Sorry. When I started, I really knew it. Now I lost it. What a shame. All right. Exactly. But it's how people are. And that's really the mess that we're in. People can't see it from any point of view but their own. It's just ghastly. But not really, because here we are, look at us, working our little hearts out to make it better. Raising children and raising ourselves just to know what it is that we're really trying to find in life. And trying to establish enclaves where people have an idea of what's true. But it's so difficult. You're working against so much. Because this idea of happiness coming from the outside is so profoundly inculcated into us. And the fear of financial liability and the fear of lack of success, it's just so overwhelming. And not untrue, because there's no supportive system. And that's where communities, the small community solution, is really hope for a better world. You see, it breaks the whole cycle. It gives people family, gives people spirituality, it gives people security. All of you know, many of you know Jacqueline, whose husband died suddenly last Sunday. Did you know that? You knew that, Peggy. Yeah, suddenly last Sunday he died. And I mean, she has this whole community that's taking care of her. You know, if she was living somewhere else, she'd just be essentially alone, maybe with a few friends or something like that. But it's just like community does that over and over and over again. And it just cuts through this whole problem of, but I have to take care of myself, but I have to have my job, but I have to have my home, but I have to have this. Because you are insecure. And who will take care of you? And also you live in a world in which everybody tells you that you're insecure. But if you live in a community or a part of a spiritual family, you're reinforced continuously until that becomes your own reality. And that's, again, talking about leadership. You know, the Machiavellian model is that I just make these people do whatever it is that my objective is. The model for the better world is that the leader's job is to help people attain what it is that they really want to attain. And you help them attain it by being very clear yourself, and by consistently acting in such a way that it encourages them. And Swami makes so much of a point, and I've certainly seen it in his life over all these years, is you can't force people to understand this by its very nature. And that's the most difficult thing of all, absolutely the most difficult. I speak from years and years of experience. It's the hardest thing to not just step over that and try to persuade them. He said you can try to force them to understand you. And to just be able to stand back and say they don't understand, and even more than that, to encourage people to come to it in their own way and in their own time. And we all know that in our lives. That's the hardest thing about raising children, about being married. It's just even when you know they're wrong. But if to recognize, and this is one of the fundamental skills of leadership, to recognize that they're not going to understand it, and you just need to let them run it through. And to be the kind of leader who has that kind of faith in other people and that kind of respect for them and that kind of just calmness in themselves that you can just see that and just recognize that it's going to be okay and they'll just let it work itself out. And the experience of Ananda has really proved it. People, we just wait. And it's a very long cycle. I know how many times over the years, I remember once Swami just said to me so simply, Asha, it takes time for people to learn the right attitude. Just that. And I think, well, it's taken me a little while, like decades, to learn some very fundamental things. So why am I surprised that it takes other people 10, 15, 20 years to learn something? It really does. But Swami's incredible genius as a leader, which he's just acted out to perfection, is that he just waits. He just holds on with this faith that it's going to work and then creates the atmosphere that we were talking about last week where the truth emanating from the source is so strong that you sort of stay on course even though you're off course. You're sort of like you have an erratic orbit, but you never really break your orbit. You stay just like the way the planets and the whole solar system is held together by this force that's pulling outward and then the force that's pulling inward, both of them together. And you kind of stay close enough in the orbit until you gradually get your system worked out. And this is the kind of leadership that results, as Swami said in the last chapter, if you create direction by dominating people's willpower, then sooner or later they get themselves together and they strike back. He talked even in this Machiavellian system, for a long time they'll be too afraid, but gradually they'll become so angry that they won't be afraid anymore, they'll just do it. And that's what you see all over, abusive systems, and then gradually people just gather their strength. Maybe it takes a generation or two, but they gather their strength and they strike back. But if the leader has won people's love, and even more than that, if the leader has created a reality in which they themselves have embraced the same principles, if you're clear on the concept, if you know where you're going, what is my goal? The goal has never been to use Ananda as the example, because it's the example that I know. And the goal has never been to build Ananda. And when years ago, the goal has always been to create self-realization in individuals, to provide the opportunity for individuals to advance towards self-realization. And Ananda has been a means to that end rather than an end in itself. And so every decision that's made favors the individual. People, as Swami writes, people are more important than things. He puts in this chapter two of Ananda's fundamental mottos. He puts it in English, where there's right action, where there's truth, there is victory. We say where there is Dharma, there is victory. And people are more important than things. Now, you really have to think those things through, but that is the basis. And the third one, which it really is not articulated as such, is that you have to be practical. Master said you have to be practical in your idealism. And Swami makes a big point of that. And he doesn't make it as a divine law. That was something Master said to him. You have to be practical in your idealism. But Swami spends a long time talking about the fact that sometimes you just have to do things that you just don't want to do because it's the only choice that you have. It can't be worked out in any other way. And so you have that principle. You have the principle of being willing to die before you will compromise what you truly believe in. And if it's not physical death, sometimes you just can't do. You can't go on. doing what you were doing. I mean, I hear such horror stories from people. A friend of mine who's a lawyer, you know, just having to leave at least one, if not two firms, because people just asked her to do dishonorable things. And she wasn't tempted, but she was just so, she was never going to do it, but she was just so dismayed that it would just be assumed that it would be just fine for her to do that. So she faced death in that case, which is termination of her professional relationship. So sometimes it's not really physical death that you're being asked to face, but the willingness to lose, apparently lose, whatever it is that you were working with because you're having to violate a principle. And that's, someone was saying to me, forgive me, I can't remember who walked up and said it, but you have to be a kshatriya to be a leader. But yes, that's what the kshatriya class is. The kshatriya class is the leadership class. You were the one who said it. The kshatriyas are the soldiers and the kings. Of course, in our culture, vaishyas are in charge. Vaishyas are the ones who are in it for themselves. And that's what you see all over the place. You see all these vaishyas who've gotten themselves into the positions of being leaders. And their entire thought is, how much more can I get for myself? Ironically, speaking of other countries, our same friends in India, a few years ago, this must have been at least 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, there was some huge scandal in India because it was revealed the level of the self-enriching that some of the politicians were doing. You know, they had taken millions of dollars out of the country and put it in Switzerland and other places. And my Indian friend, in their way, she was so funny, she said, "We knew, of course, they were taking something, but so much." You know, it was just like, but naturally, I mean, that what else do you do? They themselves have benefited, our friends, because one of the leading politicians in Delhi had a house just beyond where they had theirs, and all of a sudden, they had this four-lane road all the way to their house because it was some miles from Delhi and the road had been narrow and not that good, and now they have one of the best roads in all of India because that's where that man had his house. I mean, that's just, you know, sort of like it's the given. But they were shocked at the level. It was just so much beyond.